You thought Millard, Kyprios, and McLean worked a lot already. Now they'll work anytime you want. Subscribe to the Hockey Central Podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan. On demand. Down that salad and man up your lunch hour with the best hockey coverage possible. You're listening to Hockey Central on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Hockey Central at noon. I'm Brad Fay, Rich Sutter, Doug McLean along. We will set up a massive, clearly massive game four out west, the Calgary Flames and the Vancouver Canucks later on. We'll talk to Rick Ball, who's calling the Detroit-Tampa Bay series for Sportsnet. But first, a look back at last night, and no bigger story. Let's start with you, Rich, a good Western Canadian boy, than Winnipeg. Before we talk about what happened in the game, what a scene that was. The warm-up was as loud a building as I've ever seen in the warm-up. I've never seen that many people. And when doing the interviews, Cassie was trying to interview the players along the bench. It was an amazing scene last night. They waited a long time.
It was. I really wanted to just watch that and take that in before the game started. And then even just went on before the players came on the ice at the start of the game, just their intro and how they did it up last night was, I mean, it sent chills down my spine. It was so awesome.
You know, if to experience an NHL playoff game is one thing. It's an amazing experience because it's to play in one, I can't imagine as a player, to coach in one, I've had the honor to do that, and the way it changes, everything changes totally from, you know, the criticalness of every situation. But the fans really change. They get so into it. And you see a scene like Winnipeg last night, as good as any you've ever seen in the NHL. It's impossible for it to be any better. Like, we've been in Montreal for the, you know, for big games, for playoff games, Calgary. That last night, to me, is as good as any I've ever seen.
Well, it felt like just like the community healing. It was like a rebirth, even if even if they lose the third game like they did and it begin, they're on the death's doorstep in the series. It was a rebirth of the city. And as you said, Doug, regular season, they've had a number of regular season games there. Now suddenly it's a playoff game. It changes because it matters so much. You could see that in the emotion in the building.
Yeah, and you know, frustrating. You're down 3-0, and every game could have went the other way. It could be just as well. You know, you gotta give it to Perry and Getzlaff and you know, some of the superstars. But it's frustrating. It should be minimum 2-1 right now. That's the downside of it, because if it's 2-1, this is a different series.
Different series. First time ever.
Without fans, that's a different series.
Oh, yeah, and the first time ever that a team has come back 3 straight games, trailing after 40 minutes in the same series. But when they scored last night, Rich, when Kessler scored, the first two words that came to mind, I literally said them out loud watching home, was, of course. It just felt like you knew too many weapons on Anaheim, and if Winnipeg had provided that separation, just like Ottawa, get a 2-goal lead, it's different, but the 1 goal, you hang around too long.
Well, you kept waiting, you thinking, you know, can they hang on in the last 4 or 5 minutes? You just had that feeling that this isn't going to happen. Mm-hmm. And, you know, 3 games in a row now.
Yeah.
And look, you go back to game one with Perry and the heroics and the couple of unbelievable plays at the net and the way he stays with it for a superstar and yet drives everybody crazy. I'm not sure who the last superstar was that does what he does. You know, like, drives the other team crazy, yet he's still one of the most talented guys in the league.
Yeah, guy that...
And he brings it. He brings it. Yeah, he's got all the little, you know, quirks about his game, but he brings it when it counts, let me tell you.
When they reviewed that goal and counted it, his reaction.
Totally.
He knew it at the time it was in. And the fact that he gets booed, you know, people boo superstars, but he gets booed because he's also a pest, and that's a pretty good weapon. They bring in Ryan Kessler, Richie, to beat the Kings. Now they don't have to beat the Kings, but the Jets are giving them that kind of series where maybe without Ryan Kessler there, as Doug said, it could be 2-1 either way anyway. But without Ryan Kessler, with the big bodies and the amount of hits that are being thrown around, he's proving his worth now.
Well, and it's not in goals. It's everything else. It's he's an all-situational player. We know that. He's great on faceoffs, and he goes to those areas, and he plays a physical game, and he plays a game that, frankly, pisses people off.
Yeah, absolutely. And talk about being booed as a star player. And, they got
You know, he's always in the middle of something, whether you like it or not. Yeah. And he plays all those important situations. And he's a bonus to that hockey club and everything he brings every night and what he gives them every night on the board, off the board, complimenting the other centermen on the team, especially Getzlaff. Huge, huge plus for this team at this time of the year.
Well, you know what? It's, he brings it all, but he also makes a couple of big plays. Oh, yeah. Yeah. That play he makes to Silverberg is a, you know, you go behind the net, you win some, and then you make that pass for essentially a tap-in goal.
Yeah.
I mean, that was a great play. And then the goal. I mean, the guy, yeah, that's why he was brought in. Has his year been what everybody wanted to be? Maybe not, but now is when it all counts.
Yeah.
Now it counts totally. And it is an amazing, I'm telling you, when you're coaching against that presence of a Getzlaff, Kessler, 1-2, it's not easy to match up. Mm-hmm. It's not easy to match up, especially in fairness to the Jets, they're young down the middle with Scheifele. Going to be a heck of a player, but he's still a young kid. That's a tough matchup. Yeah. Little, who's maturing into a real good player, not a big guy, but a real good player. It's just a tough matchup down the middle.
Yeah. Final thought. Go ahead, Rich.
Well, just, yeah, with Adam Lowry and Mark Scheifele, good young players, but, yeah, you know, these guys just don't have the experience. But every game these guys get in these situations moving forward for the Jet organization is really important and really huge for these two young guys.
What I liked about Boudreaux, what he said, our stats don't show we're the best power play. They don't show this. They don't show that. The stats. But the character we have in that room and the no quit that's in that room, how they want to win what's in that room. I mean, he told it all about playoff time in his couple of comments at the end of the game for me.
And finally, he's got solidified goaltending. That's kind of followed him around the questions. But finals, a note on this series to you before we move on, because you're in that situation, 96 in the final, down 3-0, where you lost a tough game 3 at home that you could have won. You know, you're not that you defeat us, but you get the feeling maybe it's inevitable.
Yeah.
But the crowd, Winnipeg, is going to be lively for game 4. And going in there knowing that mountain that you have to climb against a more talented team, how do they approach that?
Well, you know what? We lost 3-2 in game 3 in a game I thought we deserved to win in Florida, and went into game 4 with the fans as crazy. And you can recall, I don't
know, rats.
Remember back, but it was crazy in that building at that time. Yeah. As crazy, not as good as last night, but damn close, absolutely, let me tell you. It's only 13,500 people.
First experience
people
for them of that kind of realm, right?
But it was a war, and Winnipeg will not quit. And all you say is, "Hey, let's get a win, and then we go back home and put some pressure on them." So you get a win tomorrow night, you don't ever count yourself out. And if I'm not mistaken, in our game 4, the shots were like 76-68 in that game.
Unbelievable.
Patrick Roy versus Van Beesbrouck. It was an unbelievable goaltending display. And we lost in triple overtime, which was the only thing I can remember. I was hungry. I was hungry because I hadn't eaten since 2 o'clock.
I was thirsty. I'd ran out of beer at home that night.
Yeah, so, hey, you'd love to see the Jets win and take it back.
Yeah.
The number of one-goal games that the Ducks have been involved in this year, incredible. You never know when they could lose a couple. So let's hope. You know, I mean, I'm happy for Boudreaux, but I'd love to see the Jets fans get a win.
We all would.
News for them. The celebration's on, and they're here to stay now. It's not like they're, you know, I like the banner being unraveled,
but
the exact same
but
Jet.
They've
our Jets
got
will fly forever.
You can't take bad penalties. You can't play defense in your own end like it's midseason. You got to tighten it up, and you've got to be smart, and you've got to do all the little things that give yourself a chance to win one goal games, and they've got to be conscious
the
of that.
Focus
running around. The
focus,
they can't run around in their own end. I
focus
mean,
from shift to shift has to be there. And last night there were some shifts we know.
Yeah,
they weren't there, and it killed them.
Well, guys try to do too much. You know, players try to do too much, and you know we see it with PK, we see it with Carlson, we see it with the Stars. They always try to because they want to do that extra bit. But this is the time of year where, in your own end, it's safety first, make the play second.
Yeah, and Fowler with that late goal in the period that changed
five
section
seconds
as well, right? So we'll move on to the Rangers because they held off the Penguins last night. It's interesting with an eye on the Vancouver series and how little the Sedins have played. Last night in the third period, the urgency, the Penguins, suddenly it was Crosby and then Malkin, Crosby, then Malkin, the entire third period, and they dominated the third period. Did they wait too long? I mean, what are you saving it for at this point of the year?
Well, you can't save it for anything, and you know, you've got a double shift, and we talked the other day. Get Ovechkin and Backstrom together. Mm-hmm. Double shift. Do whatever you have to do to make it tough on the other team's coach. You got to play your best players more. Regular season, I'm all for the four lines. I think you've got to do it in today's NHL. But when if I'm coaching against Pittsburgh and Malkin and Crosby come over the boards together, then they come over with just one of them, then they come. Mm-hmm. You're scrambling on the bench.
You only have so many shutdown Ds.
You're scrambling.
They have
on the
more
bench.
Than anybody. But.
You've got to challenge. You've got to challenge the other coach to do things he doesn't want to do. And the way you do that is give your extra guy, your big boys want to play. They want to be out there.
Yeah.
So give it to them.
What's that like, Rich, when you're on a team where you've got a couple of superstars like that and late in the game? I mean, I think I know the answer to this, but the feeling of when suddenly your line gets skipped because they keep sending out the big guns. Is everybody just understanding at that point that you're going to go through a stretch or you're going to get a little cold because you don't play?
There is an understanding to a degree, but that's also how good are those big boys playing too. Yeah. I mean, you know on the bench, you feel on the bench how bad they want it and are they pushing to want it to be the difference maker in the game. There was times in the first three games where I looked at number 71 and I wasn't feeling that or seeing that one bit.
Right.
In the third period, yes, but you know, Mike Johnson shouldn't have to double shift those guys, you know, at the 5 or 6 minute mark of the second, third period through the middle stages of the third period to get them going.
No.
Not so much Sydney, but you know.
Here's what I used to say to my third line guys and my fourth line guys. You make sure if I'm putting them out in place of somebody on your line, you make sure you're the other two.
Yeah.
You make sure if I'm putting Crosby out, if I'm putting Malkin out,
yeah,
as an extra shift, you make damn sure that you're one of the
other
two.
You're the one getting the call. Yeah.
Make that sure you're going with them.
Pulling your weight.
And I mean, I just think there's, like, play them together, play them separate, do whatever the hell you have to do to get these. Like, what's, Malkin hasn't scored in 13 games?
Yeah.
Like, seriously, what is going on with that? Like, what you're praying for is a 5-on-3 so you can get the guy a damn goal.
Yeah.
Well, he went without a shot again last night.
Right.
You know, seriously. So... I mean, come on. I mean, but here's a guy. I mean, not only was he not shooting the puck, he's not playing with any confidence. He was turning pucks over in soft plays coming out of his own end. Is there something wrong with this guy?
Here's a problem for Crosby and Malkin for me. And I empathize with Mike and Jimmy Rutherford right now because I'll tell you what. Mata, Ehrhoff, Letang.
Oh.
All three of those guys, forget the defensive part. What they do is they hit Malkin and Crosby through the neutral zone with speed.
Yeah.
They haven't got that element. And when you can't get Crosby the puck with speed, when you can't get Malkin the puck with speed through the neutral zone, it's easy for the Rangers to challenge them.
Yeah.
It really is. So when you're missing three puck movers that hit these guys, I'm telling you, if you ask Crosby and Malkin what a big concern is, we're not getting the puck with speed when we need it. And then you drive people off the blue line. Yeah. Then you can make your cycle and you can get some opportunities.
Sets everything up. You've seen the frustration from Sydney a few times where he just arms in the air, turns and goes back to the bench. The frustration's boiled over.
Yeah.
Jim Rutherford, Rob Rossi of the Pittsburgh Tribune Review rode the elevator down together. And I guess Rossi's been one of those that's been critical of what's happened in Pittsburgh. And Rutherford let him have it in the elevator. I guess that's to be expected at this point, but there's great frustration because of the expectation in Pittsburgh and Jim Rutherford going there, and it hasn't worked out, at least not yet.
I would like to say, you know, I wish Jimmy wouldn't have done it, and he shouldn't do it, but I'm telling you what. Yeah. I've lived it.
Yeah.
And it wasn't in a playoff game, and I wanted to rip the guy's face off. And as a matter of fact, I still would like to rip his face off if I ran into him.
Yeah.
So... You know, but you got to keep it in check. You've got to keep it in check. And, you know, maybe it's not a bad thing that some pressure pops off Crosby and Malkin today and it's on Jimmy. Maybe that's not a bad thing either. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe it's a bit of a deflection, but I feel for him because you're so competitive and you want to win so bad and you know you're in tough because of injuries. You just can't do it, but...
But when you look in your locker room there and you've got 20 guys dressed and who's ever not in your lineup, you are missing those three guys. You want to add Pouliot is another fourth guy, is a puck-moving guy. But they got to play with the desperation they played with, how they played in New York in game two. And they did that. And they did that against a real good hockey club. Yeah. The same team they didn't do that against in game three. Give the Rangers credit for what they did last night. They played a great road game. Mm-hmm. But I don't think Pittsburgh obviously did enough to fight through that, because they certainly battled through that through the first period on game two, or game two. So find a way to do it again and get this series even back up and go back to New York.
That was exactly the quote of Sidney Crosby, that we didn't play with enough desperation until it was too late.
And I'm sorry, but I would not count this guy out.
Yeah.
I would not count Sidney Crosby. I don't know Malkin, and I don't know what you're going to get. He's come through in lots of situations.
Yeah.
He's been like, he's led this team in scoring to play. I mean, I don't know how you can underestimate these two guys. Mm-hmm. And I know the Rangers are a good team. I know they're poised with Lundqvist, but I mean, I'm watching Sid last night. This guy wanted that game so damn bad, and I know he gets frustrated, but it's because he cares.
Yeah, I thought he played well. We talked about off the air before we came on, Ottawa down 3-0, Winnipeg down 3-0, the two teams that had to rally the most down the stretch. Another one that just got it going earlier was Minnesota, and maybe the fact is 15 games earlier that they were playing that way and comfortably on that edge, and here they are up 2-1 in that series. But St. Louis is not getting any kind of – this is not the prettiest series. If you like the intensity and the rivalry, it's great, but it's not going to give you a whole lot of offense, because there were 17 shots last night for the Blues.
Well, give Minnesota credit. I loved how they played. I loved how they competed.
I knew you would love how
they got they right no back surprise. In St. Louis's face. Every time St. Louis tried to do something last night, they did it in games one and two in St. Louis. And they're right there. And if anyone thinks that this isn't going to be or could be a franchise-turning series for the St. Louis Blues, they're crazy. Because this is a very important series for this franchise moving forward. And we all know that. And I think Minnesota knows that. So they're just going out and playing. And they're matching them shift after shift after shift. And they're coming in waves with their speed. And I love how they're playing.
You look at the Blues are built a little bit like the Kings. It's a power game. It's a big body game. It's, you know, they do have skill mixed in. They look like a real playoff style team. Many are playing fast. Mm-hmm. Many are playing fast.
Parise's been great.
Parise's a star.
Yeah.
He's a big time star. So it's a, you know what? I feel a little bit for the Blues, to be quite honest, because I know, as Richie said, this is an important series. They're in tough. They're against a good hockey team here. And this is, you know, you try to pick the winner of this series heading in. So it's easy to say, oh, Hitchcock's in trouble and Doug Armstrong this and Doug. Allen has played, has been good for me. I mean, he's not the reason. It's Minnesota's playing real well.
Give him credit.
Damn right. So, but if it could be ugly there, but they're in tough.
Dubnyk
hasn't had to be tested.
No. And another shout out, but 2-17, the last 19 on the road in the playoffs for the Blues. That is an alarming statistic.
Bizarre.
And people are already talking in Edmonton about Ken Hitchcock and everything. It's funny how people get ahead. Everybody, who might be available?
Everybody. They have five head coaches there next year?
Oh, man.
Who doesn't want to coach McDavid?
Yeah, well, absolutely.
You may want to get him in your – if you're really smart, you'd want the Edmonton job when McDavid goes into his third year.
In a couple
year.
Of years. No question about it. Well, let's get to the main event tonight. Montreal has a night off, Montreal-Ottawa. So the All-Canadian matchup takes center stage on CBC tonight. The Canucks and the Flames, which has been, I said at the start with Anaheim and Winnipeg playing each other, I thought that whoever survives the Canucks and the Flames would face a team, even if it is Anaheim, that would be beaten up. But Anaheim may be done in four. And now it's the winner of the Flames and Canucks that may be the team that's beaten up. Although the officials did talk to them and say no more of the shenanigans. They're going to start calling minors at the first drop of the hat going into tonight. Who knows?
Doesn't that happen? And is there a series that the supervisors don't talk to the teams?
This
if they don't talk to the teams, there's something wrong with the damn series.
Two games in a row that got goofy. But have you made of this series? The Flames have just played with reckless abandon, similar to what Doug was saying, or you were saying about
Boston. I'm not surprised how the Flames are playing. They played like that all year. And they match up very well against Vancouver, and I like the position that they are in today, and I know they certainly like that position. So I don't see it changing much. The biggest thing is what players want to know every night, and Doug will allude to this too, is that every night, every game, all the players want to know is what are the rules tonight? because they can change from the regular season to playoffs, and we've seen them change from one game to another in these playoffs already. And that's all the players want to know is where we stand. You know, just have that communication there. You know, we saw the other night where the refs were going to the benches and they were talking to both teams. They were talking to the coaches, and that makes a difference. And then the players know how to run the game and how to play.
At least if you know what the landscape
yeah,
is.
Yeah, know how far can you go with things. And if you get the communication line, I think the players really buy into that and they know how to play. And I just don't see it changing much tonight. I don't see Calgary changing their game tonight.
I think it's going to be a great game.
Can their fans one up the Winnipeg fans tonight? Let's hope so. But the biggest thing is I just think that Vancouver's in tough.
Yeah, you know what? you look at the Calgary Flames and you say, I mean, this is a character group that is really bonded in that dressing room. They are on a mission, those 22, 23 guys. They've got some gritty guys that have really stepped to the plate. Bolig, Ferland, they've some gritty guys, Eglin, but their skill sprinkles in there that people continually underestimate. You see Monahan snap it. You see Goudreau with a big play. You see Brody with a big play. You see
Bennett.
Chris Russell. You see Bennett.
Yeah.
So, but you know what? I don't think the Canucks are going to, this is a monumental test for everything that's gone on in Vancouver this year. They have tried to change their group to be a grittier, a better playoff-type team. I think they've been successful in a lot of ways in doing that. Tonight's a big test for the Canucks. And you and Willie, I don't know if the Sedins are hurt, but they've got to play. I love how Willie's handled this team all year. Four lines. I buy it. I think it was a great move. Not tonight. This group, these two guys, these are your go-to big money guys. These are your Getzlaff, your Kesslers. You better play the snot out of them tonight. Put it on them to get it done. And you put it on them by playing them.
Yep.
But they played 13, 14 minutes?
Yeah, less than Bonino and Higgins. Yeah.
So, Billy, play them and put it on them to get the job done. If they don't, you're going with your best guys.
Yeah.
If you don't, you're down 3-1.
Yeah.
And they're talking about putting Verbata, perhaps putting, I mean, no one has talked about public. Everyone's suggesting he's been quiet. The key to the season was midway through when they moved him back and gave them the depth with that Bonino line. But would you do that, Doug?
What I don't understand is this is the time of year to challenge. Okay. So you go Burrows, then you come Verbata, then you try it, mix and match a little bit. To challenge them, okay, what do we got this shift? What do we got that shift? I don't think there's anything wrong with
it. Especially because guys have played with each other all
totally.
Year.
Totally. You've got Burrows and you've got Verbata who are totally comfortable with either line. Play them with both. Mix it up a little bit.
Willie's got to push the buttons on those guys tonight, just much like Johnson did last night in Pittsburgh on Malkin and Crosby.
And Trotz did with putting Ovechkin and Backstrom together.
Yeah.
You know, it helped. But, you know, they're down too. If you don't ride your ponies,
no.
This is the time of year that's why they're paid the $6 million.
Yeah, it's electric crowd in Calgary. The only difference is they're not in the building for the warm-up like Winnipeg because they're out in the tailgate, which is quite a scene outside. Got a lot of pictures from friends in Calgary of people tailgating hours before.
This is hatred.
It is.
This series, this is playoff hockey at its best.
Love it.
It goes way back generations.
It's
the 80s and the 90s, and even that 2004 series to a certain extent.
Right.
But the 89 and 94 in particular, the 2-7 gamers that, growing up as a fan in Vancouver, there was nobody you wanted to beat more and nobody you hated losing to more than the Calgary Flames.
And you look at what we're faced with, you don't really get it with Nashville and Chicago yet. You don't really get it with Winnipeg, Anaheim, although they're two big physical teams and they're starting to hate each other a lot. But this is hatred before they drop the puck in game one.
Yeah, yeah.
And I mean, I love it. And it's dirty out there.
Yeah.
I mean, Richie, it's dirty.
It's great.
I love it. Richie would love to be playing that. Do you think there's any thought of, and it's a question that everyone's asking, any thought of Ryan Miller coming back?
I can't see it.
Pinning anything on Eddie Lack whatsoever.
I can't see it. No, I mean.
Not now.
If you're playing him in game four, I think you're panicking.
Yeah.
And I just can't see Willie doing that.
I stay with Lack tonight.
Yeah. Yeah. He's been good. If they lose tonight.
Yeah.
Badly, then maybe you revisit it then, right?
Yeah.
All right, let's take a break. We'll come back and continue to talk about the day's events and look ahead to tonight. Rick Ball will join us. He's calling the Detroit-Tampa series, the Stevie Eiserman Bowl. We'll be back on Hockey Central at noon, the Sportsnet radio and television networks in the U.S. on the NHL Network. Stay tuned.
That little speaker on your phone doesn't stand a chance. Subscribe to the Brady and Walker podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan, on demand. Now, more Hockey Central on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Hockey Central at noon along the Sportsnet radio and television network in Canada. To those watching in the NHL Network, on the NHL Network in the United States, we welcome you back as we get to our three stars, and you guys are going the traditional route, and I had to cop out because I was just so impressed last night with what I saw. Turning on the game in the pregame and seeing the building just jumping. I don't think I've ever seen that before. I've seen buildings loud, but not that early in the game. So the Winnipeg fans are my star, and welcome back to NHL playoff hockey. There'll be several more dates. Might not be another one after tomorrow night this year, but the Winnipeg fans certainly showed up and were full value. When you pump it up like that, sometimes there's a bit of a letdown for people to see. But if you're watching at home, and obviously if you're in the building, there is no doubt that this is as loud as it can possibly get in the National Hockey League. Rich.
Andrew Cogliano. Three assists last night, three real big plays on three goals. The puck battle down low in overtime to get the puck back to the point to Boschman. You know, the guy just does everything so well. He skates, he creates with his speed, his forecheck. He's not afraid to get in and hit people. His penalty killing, he just does everything with such a purpose. Not a guy you hear about a lot with the Hockey Club Anaheim, but a very, very important piece, especially at this time of year. He's a heck of a player.
Good lesson that you give up on players like Edmonton. Could really use this type of guy right now.
Dubnyk, Cogliano.
Now, I know you picked the Winnipeg Jets fans because you wanted to desperately pick a Canuck, but really you were hard-pressed to find somebody you were
they didn't play
really happy with, and they didn't play. I'm going with Kessler. I mean, it's an easy choice.
There's a Canuck.
But he was brought in to do just this, and so far he's been pretty good. Average season by his standards, but this is what it was all about when Bob Murray acquired him. These games and came through last night with flying colors.
And look at after the goal, the quick look to the Winnipeg fans. Kessler hasn't changed an iota. And boy, if somehow the Canucks get through and end up playing the Ducks, it'd be a lot of fun to see the reaction to him there.
Watch him in any series.
Yeah.
I mean, think back to when the Canucks played in Nashville and that run. I mean,
that was his best. He was the best player in the world for that 10-day stretch. Predators and the Blackhawks, Capitals and the Islanders, the other two series tonight before we get to the Lightning and Red Wings with Rick Ball. So how about the Isles leading 2-1? Talk about another building, one last hurrah in the Assel Coliseum, and that place was jumping when before and after Tavares scored the winner.
It was absolutely electric the other night, especially in the start the Islanders had the first 10, 15 minutes. If they can duplicate that again tonight and maybe get a goal to really get them off and running, I think it's going to be a difference maker tonight. But I think we're going to see a different Washington Capitol team. Barry Trotz is a hell of a coach, and he's going to find a way to push some of these guys' buttons.
Yeah, they didn't play hard enough. And you got to give Boychuk credit. The job he has done defensively, he's been a difference maker for them. And John Tavares, you talk about McDavid going and what he'll mean for wherever, in Edmonton. Has there anybody done more for a franchise than what John Tavares has done for the New York Islanders? Boys, I'm sorry, but it's every night he shows up. He's got unbelievable admiration by his teammates. They think this guy is, and he is.
Yep.
He is. He is the consummate NHLer.
And you know what? He's reintroduced the glory of the Islanders to a generation that it's been a joke.
You want to believe it.
Since they won all their Stanley Cups. I was going to ask you because a couple of your brothers played on those Stanley Cup championship teams and before you were in the NHL. Memories of being in that building during the Stanley Cup playoffs or one of the wins maybe?
Not one of the wins, but gone there. Went in there after we'd gotten beat out with the Flyers. Went in there and cheered my brothers on. It was so much fun sitting in the stands watching the Islander and Ranger fans
oh.
not really interact,
yeah.
do the things otherwise. But it was wild, and it's a great building. It's had a lot of great history. They need a new building if they're ever going to get a team back
sure.
there. But, you know, it's great to have that right now for the fans and for yeah. these young guys.
Perfect.
They get a feel for what it was like back then.
Mm-hmm.
And they're feeling that now, and the fans are helping them, you know, push them on. And it's been great. It's been great for the Islander fans and been great for the young players there.
And doing it without Hamonic, who is a real important player yeah. in their top four. You don't like missing a top four D this time yeah. of year. We talked about the Pens, but, you know, he's an important guy. I go back to Boychuk and the veteran guys, oh. he and Tavares.
Thank you, Boston. They were chanting in Long Island every time Boychuk yeah. made a play.
Yeah.
Besides the Capitals and the Penguins, obviously, everyone wants to see the Islanders and Rangers one more time in the next round would be great. The Predators and Blackhawks is the other one. I know you love Jonathan Toews, Doug. Everybody does. 5 points in the series yeah. so far. And exactly what you just said about Tavares.
Same thing.
But same thing about Jonathan Toews. Right?
And then you put his line. Saad scores a big goal. Hossa has been a horse so far. And then you say, what can you say about Keith and Seabrook? Keith gets the winner. Seabrook scores a big goal. I mean, they're just such valuable mm-hmm. team first guys.
They've just been through it. And
team first
yeah,
guys.
Yeah,
you know,
with the Olympic teams, with two Stanley Cup runs, I mean, eventually it's a kind of thing.
Yeah.
We go back to those Islanders, guys like Tinelli and Bourne that no one around the league would have known. But after a couple of Stanley Cup runs, you get to know how valuable these guys are. And then we're talking about these guys are at the different level of the superstar level.
So imagine sitting in a dressing room, and Rich, you know this from playing, but imagine sitting in a dressing room and watching Tavares and Toews. And you're telling me you're not going to try to go through the wall?
Mm-hmm. If they're doing
now,
it, right?
In fairness to Nashville, Weber, Fisher, monumental losses, tough losses. But that's what happens.
And Fisher's closer. I don't know if he will play tonight, but yeah. I mean, without Weber, I mean, we know they're in tough. But I think it doesn't matter who you're having in that lineup. If Jonathan Toews is anywhere near where he was the other night,
yeah.
And what about
lights out?
Mm-hmm. What about Darling?
Darling, I was going to say the goaltending. Yeah, that's the only thing you could.
This
point
is out. Unbelievable.
It was incredible, and coming in, and I think they made the right move, and I think you would have done the same thing, Doug, as you go back to Crawford. In game two,
totally.
Because if you didn't, you lose him now when he lost. You have to go with Darling, yeah. and you can always come back
right.
to the veteran, but they made the right move.
And Joel summed it up the other night after he came in relief. He said, all he's ever done when he's come in is win
mm-hmm.
and stop the puck.
Yeah.
I mean, they've got a lot of confidence in this guy. And Crawford is such a team-first guy, doesn't faze him. Crawford knows he's going to have to come back in, and he is going to have to get the job done eventually. But team-first guys is what it's all about this time of year.
And the way their defense played the other night, Darling didn't have to be great. He just made the first save. There were second chance opportunities there, but Chicago's defense and first forward back were so strong around the front of the net, they just cleared pucks. They actually made it look easy for him at times, as hard as Nashville did try mm-hmm. to make something happen.
Somebody said Darling's one of the best conditioned guys in Chicago. I said, maybe he's the best conditioned guy, but I'll tell you who mm-hmm. the best conditioned guy is Keith.
Yeah.
When you watch what this guy does at his size and the amount he plays and the big plays he makes, somebody said 22,000 minutes he's played in the last 10 years of hockey.
Get out there again.
Unbelievable.
Duncan, the other series tonight is the last one to play game three. It'll be on Sportsnet, the main channel, 7 Eastern, the Lightning and the Red Wings. Rick Ball is calling it with John Garrett and Dan Murphy, and Rick's on the line with us. Rick, you're in Detroit, I know now, and took a while to get to this game three, but what are your impressions of the first two games dominated by Tampa, even if it was a split?
Yeah, certainly the first game was dominated by Tampa. I thought, ironically, the second game was a lot more evenly played, and that was the one that the Lightning won. The Red Wings rode on the shoulders of an outstanding goaltending performance by Peter Mrazek in that first game when they were outshot badly, 46-13 or whatever it was. So, you know, they got the win. They got a steal on the road. And now Tampa's got to play on the road. And it's an interesting question for the Lightning guys coming into this game in the next two, in fact, in Detroit. They have the worst road record amongst all the playoff teams. So John Cooper was asked about that today. He kind of danced around the question, but I think it's got to be a bit of a concern. His team did not play nearly as well away from home as they were at home, where they had the best record in the league this season. And I'm very curious to see how that unfolds over the next two games in Detroit.
Yeah, and sometimes you throw those out the window at playoff time because things change, but you know, it is a factor. And I'm really anxious to see tonight the abdicator factor. They've got Dadzuk Zetterberg playing together. They probably, obviously, tonight split them up with abdicator back in the lineup. That's got to be a positive for the Red Wings that they can use Dadzuk Zetterberg together, or they can split them up and challenge Tampa Bay a little bit.
Yeah, and that's what they're going to do tonight, Doug, is they'll split those two guys up. And Mike Babcock didn't pull any punches yesterday. He was not happy with the way with the matchup, the Riley Sheahan line against Stamkos' line in the first two games. He thought they had way too much space. Kind of threw that Sheahan line under the bus a little bit yesterday. It feels like getting Advocator back in the lineup and then being able to split Datsyuk and Zetterberg onto separate lines will give them better matchups. Plus, they obviously on home ice have a chance to work their matchups a little easier than they do on the road. So that could be a big factor tonight in terms of shutting down the Stamkos line. Although I think Steven Stamkos, he's got some points, but he hasn't certainly stood out to me like I expected he's certainly capable of doing. He's been fairly quiet, has not dominated for long stretches of games, even though he's picked up a few points along the way. I'm real curious to see how he's able to raise his game to the next level for Tampa. I'm sure that they want to see that out of him as well, even though he has two assists and got them both in the last game. He's obviously got to be a big piece of the puzzle for them, and the Red Wings need to try and shut that line down over the course of the series. So we'll see how that plays out tonight and what Mike Babcock does in terms of line matching in this game.
I think also the biggest thing too, Rick, do you not think just having Abdelkader back in the lineup, it makes John Cooper think differently about how his matchups are going to be tonight, because he doesn't have that last change, but just the importance of the Abdelkader and the power play, he just plays so many important minutes, and he's always around that net and scoring important goals.
Yeah, he had a great season this year. He's also a physical guy. You know, the Wings don't have a lot of those types of players, and Tampa Bay and John Cooper talked about it today after the skate. They really tried to establish a physical presence, especially in game two. They're a much bigger team than Detroit is. And if the Wings are going to be able to push back at all on those terms, then Justin Abdelkader has to be a piece of that puzzle. So getting him back in the lineup is, I think, important for them on a lot of different levels, not the least of which is their ability to maybe stand up to a much bigger Tampa Bay Lightning team.
It's amazing. Abdicator is the most important player in the history of the Red Wings all of a sudden. And you know what? This is a guy that was a horse in college, and I mean all through it, 23 goals this year. This was his coming out year. And just as Richie said, the flexibility he gives Babcock is enormous. It changes. Your top six are so critical, and he comes in as that prototypical playoff-type player. And I think you're going to see a little different Red Wing team with him in the lineup for sure.
Tampa Bay, Rick, it sometimes gets grouped in with Florida. In Doug's days, we were talking about how the building rocked when they went to the finals, and now you tune in a lot of nights and the building's half empty. But you can't group Tampa in with that, can you? Because I know all year they get exciting. They got a good game day presentation, everything else. What was it like for two playoff games?
It was fantastic. That's a pretty good hockey market. I agree with you. I mean, I think winning a cup certainly helps in terms of establishing a foothold in a non-traditional city. But you know, with Jeff Vinnick's done a great job there as the owner. They put together a very good team, which is a factor too. Winning certainly is the best marketing tool. You know, putting the arena downtown is also really important. The one in Florida is somewhere out near the Flemish Cap. So, and that's a big issue in that city in terms of turning Miami into a hockey town, whereas in Florida, Tampa, it's right in the center of downtown. So you put all those factors together and you wind up with a really good atmosphere. And, the two games there and the start of the series were loud. The place was full. It was almost all Tampa fans. I know there was some stories about them not, restricting sales of tickets to residents of the state of Florida only. So that drew some complaints, but you wound up with a very pro Tampa crowd where sometimes you might get a lot of snowbirds down there cheering for the team they're playing against. And it was a really good atmosphere. I've said for quite a while that Tampa, I think, has got potential as a hockey town, and they're into their team, and it's as loud as a building as you'll find along the way. I mean, they get behind them, and one thing Vinnick did do when he bought that team is he immediately put $50 million into that arena, including a massive scoreboard, and the overall game day presentation there is very, very good, and that's also a big factor in setting the tone in terms of atmosphere.
People forget that, Vinnick has been terrific. No doubt he's been a great owner. But it was pretty good before when the Detroit guys had it and they won a Stanley Cup and they were drawing 22,000 a game down there. So Vinnick has been good. Yzerman is good. But it's the same. If you don't win, you don't have a chance to be successful in these markets. And they've done a pretty good job. When the Detroit group left and Orne and the guys came in and they didn't have the money to you know, get it done, it was tough sledding. It was tough sledding. So, you know, if you win in these markets, you'll do well. If you don't win, but you haven't got a chance.
Doug, I agree with you, obviously. I mean, it's really the single biggest marketing tool in any market, even where hockey is the number one sport. And look at Vancouver. I mean, they had a couple of tough years, and suddenly their sellout streak is over, and that's a great hockey town, obviously. Well, you know from experience, you know, in the other Florida market, your arena needs to be downtown. And let's get serious here. You put it way out in the middle of nowhere, and that's a massive hurdle that only makes it more difficult when the team on the ice isn't that successful.
Yeah, but if the Panthers have a couple of Stanley Cup runs, they'll find the building.
Yeah. Yep. All right, Rick, enjoy Game 3, getting down to the last few days in Joe Louis as well, one of the historic buildings, and take care of Cheech for us. We'll talk to you down the road.
All right, I'll keep him safe. Thanks, guys.
All right. There's Rick Ball again on Sportsnet tonight.
He's great a good. Call. He's a really good play-by-play guy.
Radio Vancouver.
Do you think he's better without
years?
Rudy or with Rudy?
I'm better.
He's got Garrett there, but
Kipper's Garrett's better with Rudy.
Should we ask Kelly
here,
that?
So that's
Garrett's
all that
a little different because he's the homer thing.
He doesn't have a home team. No.
The home thing is out of the mix, so it makes him a little more tolerable.
He'll side with the team that has the better food. Maybe
would Kelly be able to answer that question?
Anyway, I love listening to Rick Ball.
Yeah, you know, Rick, long time junior voice in Kelowna, and then Vancouver radio voice. Voice of the Flames this year and regional games TV and now doing this.
It's going to be difficult for him, his team's Calgary.
Yeah.
And what's going on in Calgary and Vancouver, and he's doing the other series.
He's got an eye on Vancouver.
I mean, I couldn't imagine what John Garrett's going through.
It's going to be an interesting game. You know, Detroit, the whole Babcock thing, the Stamkos, the Yzerman, there's I'm looking for this series to heat up.
Yeah.
To heat up. And I think Abdicator brings a little heat
maybe
to the party. Smith probably goes in the back end.
Yeah, he will.
So many times when they change cities, this series is behind. It's only game three. And that first game in the new city, because you've dealt with the villains and who you're looking at. I mean, that first game was just very strange.
You know, we talk about
getting out shot 46-30.
Pittsburgh, how do you count out the big boys? I know Sid's had his issues at playoff time and that, but he's still Sid Crosby.
You're going to go Zetterberg Datsyuk, right?
And you got the Red Wings with Kenny Holland and Babcock and company. You don't count those guys.
You got the smartest coach in the game on the Red Wings bench, so they should figure it out.
24 straight years in the playoffs. So we got to
just ask them.
Couple minutes finally to set up. So let's return our attention to the Vancouver Calgary, and we touched on it. But what do you expect tonight, and what will be the sign for you that it's going to go either way when you watch the first 10 minutes?
Well, you're not going to get a boring start, and you're not going to get a boring hockey game. And I think you're going to see exactly what's gone on the first three games. And if you don't, then something's amiss here. So I just think that they're going to come out and they're going to rip each other's heads off. If they don't, then something's wrong. And that's, I don't expect anything less. I expect it to be one of those games that's going to be one that every fan is going to love to be at.
And I'm telling you, Vancouver, people are writing off Vancouver. It would not surprise me Vancouver win tonight.
This has been their pattern.
They're capable.
Throughout the year, every time you figure they're done, they bounce back. Game two in this series, they did, and they're no given, but that's been
they're capable of going in there and winning tonight. And, you know, it's so many of these games, it's you get a bounce, you get a break. It puts the other teams on their heels. You can't predict when these two teams are this close. I still think it's going to be a long series.
Everybody picks seven games, coin flip. Yeah.
And I just expect Henrik and Daniel to really step up tonight.
That's what I want to see tonight.
See the minutes. I think people will have the stopwatches going. And as you say, if they don't play upwards of 20, then maybe something's wrong.
Put it in your star's hands.
Yeah.
And if you don't get it done, hey, that's all a coach can do is give them the opportunity.
Well, that's what you're supposed to do, right, Doug?
Right.
With Verbata, we talked about it quickly, would you just move him in and out, put him with them for a bit, give him a different look?
I'd move him in and out.
Yeah.
I'd move him in and out and give him different looks. He can play with both of them. He's one of the smartest players on their team.
Yep.
I'd give Hartley as many looks as he could, and I'd even consider playing him with other guys.
Good stuff. Four games to enjoy tonight across the Sportsnet channels. Rich Sutter, Doug McClain, I'm Brad Fay. Thanks for listening to Hockey Central at noon on the Sportsnet Radio and Television Network. and on the NHL Network in the United States. Enjoy your day.